Welcome to the Tuesday edition Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold, and you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home. But it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way. And I recommend you start with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior, exterior paint, high-end, or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you and answer all your questions. Stop by today and get a free paint sample to start your new project. Give them a call at 385-6649. That's 385-6649. And we appreciate their sponsorship here on Above the Fold. Hope you had a good weekend. It was rainy on Saturday and Sunday. However, we did get the spring game in, and that's a good thing. And the weather's been beautiful yesterday and today. I think we're in for a little rain coming up in the next day or two. But I appreciate you joining us here. Got a lot to talk about. Got a county commission meeting today, which we've teed up some of the issues there. We'll talk about those a little bit later. And also a school board meeting. Not a lot on that agenda, although I will tell you on the school board meetings, some things happen at the meeting that is not on the agenda, and that's why we cover it in real time. So we'll keep an eye on that for you and have more on Thursday. But we'll talk about in our next segment, we're going to focus on a topic that I think I get out more than any other local media outlet, and that's talk about Blueprint, the intergovernmental agency, which is made up of 12 elected officials. The 7 from the county commission and 5 from the city commission. It's a group that's tough to get on the same page. And if you can manage to listen to a meeting and analyze it, you can find some, you know, details that don't get reported. Meeting that was last week involved the intersection that at Roberts Road and Centerville Road in terms of how they're going to lay out that intersection, connecting it to Wilani Boulevard. So we'll tell you what they decided, what their options were. But beyond that, what was revealed in this meeting is the sentiments of elected officials in regards to how they view growth in our community and the benefits of growth. And we're clearly, I think, if you look at that meeting, and we'll talk about the Village Square had a city-county town hall last night. If you take some of the answers to the questions at that get-together, there's definitely this this breakdown of elected leaders who want to stop any major projects that have been approved by Blueprint. Now, as I've often said, the word nuance is my favorite word, and you know, being against projects for a stated reason and a rationale is one thing, but to just throw in and say you're against all these projects because you don't think they're needed, I think maybe sells short a little bit of what people have put a lot of work into and are trying to plan for the future here in our community. So this is really shaped up to developers on one side. They're bad developers. And then on the other side is that people that say we need money for more of the social spending because of the challenges of our community. Now, obviously the answer is probably somewhere in between, but given our political dialogue in this country, which is now filtered down to the local side, it's you're either for it or against it. There's not a lot of nuance. What we're going to do is talk about a little nuance about this Blueprint vote and sort of what we're hearing from elected officials. So stay tuned for that. That'll be, I promise you'll learn some stuff you don't know during that segment. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to go through a segment on ballot harvesting. I found out some disturbing information over the last couple of days after really digging in and talking to election officials and getting answers to questions. You know, you can get a lot more out of people if you call them and say, listen, you're not the focus of a story. I'm not going to quote you. I just want you to tell me the lay of the land here. What's going on? And I think if you're listening to this and you're a Republican, you're going to be surprised. If you're listening to this and you're a Democrat, you're going to be surprised. What's going on in Florida, I think, is I'm not going to talk about motives, but sort of the information that we're getting about how tight this election bill is and how it's going to fix some things, I think is really drawn into question by something that I found out and will share with you at the 11:30 segment. We'll finish the day with our weekly trends in COVID numbers here in Leon County. As you know, if you've listened, we like to look at 7-day trends instead of reporting on a daily COVID number here for Leon County. We are obviously reaching the stage to where things are bottoming out, and so not a lot of big decreases. It's more fluctuations is what I would call them. But if you look at the levels that we are on our indicators, which we'll talk in detail about in the last segment, you know, we've been in below these benchmark numbers for a while, like the positivity rate. So we'll dig into that. We'll talk about the YouTube fiasco that Governor Ron DeSantis is dealing with in the last segment, and we'll also brief discussion about private businesses versus government requirement. We hear a lot about vaccine passport, and government requiring it. What if a business requires it? Isn't not their freedom to do that? We'll talk about that a little bit, and so it's going to be an action-filled show. And I also want to take this opportunity. We had a producer here for a long time named Bobby Mack, who moved on and actually is gainfully employed now, I think, up in the Washington, D.C. area. But we've got a new producer, and, you know, it looks like one of the requirements I had is that he be named Bobby. And we were able to do that. So Bobby is our new producer. He's been working behind the scenes. And, you know, one of the things that I think once you get to know your producer, that adds to the show, is a little back and forth. So we want to... when you hire somebody into a new job, you want to make sure they're staying around before you introduce them. So I think you're here for a little while, huh, Bobby?
Yeah, man. I've been working with you since November, actually.
Is it been that long?
It has been, man. So
hey, when you have 6 kids and 2 dogs, things just go by so fast. And I forget. Well, I've been doing a great job. A little bit of background for our audience here, Bobby.
On me?
Yes.
All right. Well, hello, audience. I'm Bobby Brown Jr. Yes, that is my given name. I'm a stand-up comedian. I do produce for Steve, and I produce for other shows here at Real Talk as well. So some of y'all might have heard me on a couple of other shows if you listen to the station. So thank you.
All right. Well, listen, we'll do a little back and forth. I know that, Bobby, we talk football. I believe you're from Jacksonville area, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Go Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, go Jags. I'm trying to get the Jags to draft Trevor and Etienne.
Yeah, that would be insane.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that. But anyway, thanks for joining us today. When we get back, we're going to dig into the blueprint. And I think, again, this is into the nuts and bolts of how things get done. So stay tuned. You'll get some information you don't know. I'm Steve Stewart. Thanks for joining us. She loves to sing. She does everything. She loves to move. She loves to groove. She loves a lot of things. All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Tuesday. Appreciate you joining us. As I said before, Blueprint. You know, just a quick study on Blueprint. Again, it's the 7 elected officials on the county, 5 on the city. They spend more money than you probably are aware of, and it's through the penny sales tax. Millions of dollars go to infrastructure projects. Now, there is a percentage of that now that is up for economic development, 12%. They were allowed to do that per state law. And it's very important to keep an eye on where that money goes, especially given now the divide we seem to have among our elected leaders and in terms of their views of what projects should be reconsidered. Again, when you talk about blueprint, it requires long-term planning. And so oftentimes these projects that get approved sometimes have to get changed. There's modifications. And to do that, you've got to have a supermajority of a vote to get it changed. And we've seen that happen a couple of times. One was with the Airport Gateway, I believe, and another is with the Willani Boulevard project in terms of how it was going to be connected to Shamrock. And so, again, the community can rise up, can raise questions. And I think that if you saw on the Gateway issue, it was not about actually taking a project from one part of the community and moving it. it was actually adding the airport gateway, changing the route, but continuing to do some upgrades on Lake Bradford, Bradford Road, which was the original choice for the airport gateway before some other things came up. And so the vote last week, or the meeting last week, was about Wilani Boulevard, which was, you know, there was a lot of controversy over Wilani Boulevard project, and it related to the Shamrock Extension. A lot of people were concerned about routing traffic through Killarney Estates, and so a lot of times these projects get, you know, either for or against it. A number of people in Killarney was not against Wilani Boulevard and the project. They were against how the connection to Wilani Boulevard was going to happen. So what that got ironed out. So they're going to do the connection at the same time they do the connection to Roberts Road, so that a lot of traffic doesn't get run through Killarney Estates. Now, so what they're talking about at the meeting last week was, what was the intersection at Roberts Road and Centerville going to look like with Wilani Boulevard? And the staff did a very in-depth analysis, presented about four options, A, B, C, and D. And, you know, the debate was not about as much. It was about the options. D was a late entry into the option. It involved taking some property from someone that didn't want to give it up. But there was a vote to go ahead and go with option A, which basically is a five-armed roundabout will be the intersection there. But during that debate, you know, there was a move to try to kill the project. And basically that is called the no-build option. And Commissioner Matlow, who has voiced his concerns over building the road, saw a little bit of an opportunity, because people were a little frustrated with all the different options they had to deal with. And so he tried to get a no-build vote taken. That didn't work. So the option A for the intersection, the five-armed roundabout, passed 7-3 with Commissioner Brian Welch, who favored the option that was going to take some private property away from a family, about half of their property. But he favored that, as did, I don't know if Jeremy Matlow and Jack Porter favored that. They were voting basically against it because I think they supported the no build. But again, hearing the discussion about that project led into the Village Square last night, where we had the town hall, and there was questions about growth. And one of the questions from Skip Foster, the former publisher of the Democrat who was moderating, I wasn't available, Bobby, so
either honestly, that I think you would have done great, Steve.
Either that or they lost my phone number. But Skip does a good job of that. One of the questions was, if we spend more money to address homelessness and affordable housing, what should we spend less on? Well, Commissioner Matlow took to Twitter and said, controversial huge money luxury projects with little public support, which in fact have lost any semblance of a mandate, should be set aside today. Borrowing from today's residents and sales taxpayers to fund the building of a proposed convention center project, a $50 million Northeast Gateway, or $60 million hastily planned airport gateway project are ideas whose times have come and gone. Now, the wording of that, and Commissioner Matlow has been on the show, we're going to get him back hopefully the next couple of weeks. If you read that, it doesn't say we should reassess their benefit to the community. It doesn't say that, hey, this project is less valuable than these other two. It says these projects, their need for them has come and gone.
Like done, over.
That is a bold statement, especially when they are on the agenda to be done. They've been voted by a majority of the board. Now, I wanted to take a time just to sort of diagnose this, because if you look at the projects, the convention center, I think, is the one that you could do the most debate on, given the pandemic and how things can possibly be impacted by that in the near future. However, I think it warrants, and there are a lot of cost-benefit studies out there about convention centers. I will tell you, the stuff that I was able to read was saying that they are a better bet than sports complexes like stadiums. But the issue that Matlow has is that it's being subsidized by taxpayer dollars. And so we've got to do a cost-benefit analysis, and we've got to pick that apart to decide if this is something that we move forward on. Now, I will tell you, this is a little bit different than some convention centers. This would be partnered with the Dedman School of Hospitality, and so that adds another benefit and something that would be not, you know, is not as usual in other towns where you have a university that is going to be tied in with a convention center. So that would be something that would have to be considered. So I think you can look at that. But I will tell you that these other two projects, the one, the FSU Gateway and the Northeast Gateway, you know, these are things that people have to try to figure out the future, and you have to plan for the future. You look at Gain Street. There were a lot of people that were against Gain Street. I was one of the people who were against some of the money that was being subsidized there for private developers on actually building buildings. And so I think there needs to be the nuance, the delineation of what we're doing here. The Northeast Gateway is, yes, we're spending taxpayer money for a road. Commissioner Matlow thinks that we're subsidizing developers, that they should be paying for the road. But, you know, again, the Northeast Gateway has been an issue that's been dealt with for the last 20 years. It not only is about development, it is about traffic. And I didn't hear a lot of people talking about that, because one of the issues that we have in the Northeast is Thomasville Road and all the traffic that is coming down Thomasville Road. And if you remember, they tried to route some of that traffic through Killarney Estates. Florida DOT thought about doing that. That got stopped and put off. And so now this Wilanie Boulevard is also an option to relieve traffic. And so now I understand that some of these commissioners have just been elected. But a lot of times when you get elected, there's some things that you have to accept as baseline, because there are decisions that are made that are locked in, and they have impact decisions that are being made. You can't just stop things. And what I'm referring to is this. You know, the city is annexed in a lot of property. They've done it for reasons. I mean, you know, they obviously want to develop their tax base. That's on the record. When you start annexing property in to the city, that becomes areas that need to be developed. They have access to infrastructure, water and sewer, electricity. And so you also have to provide roads. And if you look at Bannerman Road, which is right up against a lot of city development, we are way behind in widening Bannerman Road. Now, it's on the list now to get widened, but because of the development that has taken place up there mostly within the city limits, that road is at capacity. So it would have been a good idea to have that road widened years ago, given where people are moving. Now, I understand, you know, we talk about infill and wanting to develop downtown, but I don't think we have the space downtown, and it's not as easy. It's a lot easier to say infill versus doing it. There's some infill taking place, but nothing. I mean, right now we see residential resales prices going through the roof because of the lack of supply. So, you know, again, the Wilanie Boulevard is something that I think has been planned. Now, if you want to debate how much money developers are making and they shouldn't be making that much, that's one thing. But to say you want to just kill it because, you know, you don't think that it's going to be useful in 10 years, that's a strong argument given all the analysis that's gone into it. I'm willing to listen, but I think you're going to really have to make a strong argument there. Now, on the Airport Gateway, which we'll continue to talk about after this break, on the Airport Gateway, that is a decision that was made for economic reasons, trying to build up our economic infrastructure in a partnership with FSU and the Innovation Park out there. And so that is something, again, when we get back, we'll talk about why people are against that and what the future would hold, or why our leaders decided to move the gateway to that area. So stay tuned and we'll dig into that. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. It's Tuesday, and we're talking Blueprint. Before we get to that, Bobby, we were talking about convention centers, and it made me think. I've spent more time in convention centers this year than in my whole life because I have a daughter that plays club volleyball. And if you can tell, my voice might be a little bit hoarse because what I what I yell at all these, I go to, believe it or not, I don't have a microphone, but I yell, "Set Kate! Set Kate!" And so Kate's a spiker on the team, and so I'm always yelling for them to set Kate. And I just started thinking about this with these convention centers. There are parents, I mean, it's amazing to see this.
Yeah.
199 courts in Atlanta last weekend in the World Congress Center, stretched across a concrete floor.
That's
199.
Crazy.
There's 12 girls on a team.
Yeah. Honestly, I thought you were supposed to be quiet for volleyball. I didn't know you could yell.
Oh, not no. When you pay the money we pay, you yell. But anyway, so that's my moniker, Set Kate. That's that. Who's that dad over there?
I'm going to start saying that now to my friends. They're not going to know what that
means. Just say that. We might just blurt that out at the show sometime. All right. Anyway, that's on the convention centers. You know, that's one of the things, again, you know, again, talking about economic development, we've talked about the Appalachie Park east of town, which is a great example. Very little investment. Now, I understand this, but the amount of sports, cross-country sports and championships that are being held there is amazing. And they measure this by people that are staying in hotels and everything. It's a great plus. And, I mean, parents are willing to spend money on sports and their kids. There's just no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's what you have when you're a kid. Like, you have sports, you have travel sports, and that's kind of where the money goes to for those things. And I think I actually pulled up Commissioner Matlow's Twitter when you were talking about it earlier, about the topics that he was saying. With the tweets, I agree, you know, but like with what you were saying, you added some more aspects that I didn't even know that were involved in making decisions when it comes to, you know, committing, saying, hey, let's build this here or let's stop doing that.
Exactly. And so it's, again, nuance is our word, you know, along with Set Kate. And and so, but anyway, all right, to finish up with the blueprint topic so we can get into this ballot harvesting, you know, the FSU Gateway, this was another issue. All right, listen, one of our economic assets here is FSU and FAMU.
Yeah.
We have a joint engineering school, Innovation Park. We have the Mag Lab. It's at Innovation Park. And so the focus to try to make something like a research triangle, which is a research park triangle, which is in North Carolina, has been sort of focused on Innovation Park. So now, as this, the Mag Lab, which is world-renowned, you know, FSU and our leaders have decided that having a gateway from the airport, which is on that side of town, that delivers people inside, you know, to Downs Gaines Street to the city, is the way to go. In the sense that that would be like a place that you would hope industry would pop up and sort of in support of the Mag Lab, where you try to commercialize these things that, you know, the Mag Lab is developing. Danfoss Turbocore is out there. That has been, you know, I won't say the only success out in Innovation Park, but it is definitely the main success out in Innovation Park, and they're expanding. And so to say that is a bad decision because of the economic benefits, I think is going to, again, takes an argument. Now, if there are people that don't want it in their backyard, I completely understand that. And that, again, warrants a debate on how to mitigate some of the impacts and to see if they can be mitigated. But again, I'll end it with this. You know, to say that unilaterally that these projects need to be canceled, to use a word that's, you know, in our literature.
Oh, my God. I hate that word so much.
To be canceled, I think, is something that doesn't do the debate any good. And I don't think it really helps out Tallahassee in the long run. Again, willing to talk about the nuances and hopefully we can get Commissioner Matlow on here. Maybe we can get some of the developers on here, too, that are involved with this and get them to talk about, you know, what their visions are. But this is something I think the community is going to need to address, especially given the comments that are getting more aggressive, I think, from right now as a minority. But it's important that I think the community figure out where we want to head with these big projects. All right, ballot harvesting. Listen, I'll spend the remainder of this segment on this the next 4 or 5 minutes. It's a complicated subject here. The kind that I like, because you have to make phone calls to figure things out. There's a bill moving through the Florida legislature that's an election bill. There's one already signed in Georgia that is obviously causing a lot of brouhaha up there. And it is these bills are revolved around trying to, on the one side, tighten voting integrity. On the other side, it's viewed as voter suppression. And we can talk about that another day. But one of the things I want to talk about is at the center of this is ballot harvesting. And I want to define that for you when you hear this term. Ballot harvesting has to do with absentee or vote by mail ballots. And it's a term that it refers to people who are either volunteers of campaigns or organizations, and or they can be volunteers or they could be paid, that they go around and they collect absentee ballots from people's homes and they deliver them to either drop boxes, put them in the mail, or take them to elections offices. Now, obviously, the quote ballot harvesting comes from harvesting the ballots. What has happened is this has become a concern in some quarters because people have access to voters' addresses, to the people that are requesting absentee ballots, so they know when you get it, so they can show up to your door. So let's say now there's even gotten to a point to where there are organizations that are helping groups of people or neighborhoods or apartment complexes request absentee ballots. They get them almost on the same day, so then they can go to that area and they can knock on a door and make sure that they fill those out. Now, there are laws that if you vote in person, you're not allowed to have anybody in the voting booth with you. You're actually, no campaigning is supposed to happen within 150 feet of a precinct.
That's what I was just thinking about.
So, when you get a absentee ballot and somebody knocks on your door and you haven't filled it out and they're asking for it, well then, you know, there is this problem because are they going to help you fill it out? Or are they going to recommend who you vote for? And so this is the issue with ballot harvesting. Now, there's a delineation on ballot harvesting. Some people, in some states, it's completely against the law. How do you make it against the law? Well, let's take Georgia, for instance. In Georgia, they say that only you or your family member can return your absentee ballot. Now, in some extenuating circumstances, you can do an affidavit, say this person can return the ballot. So that's against the law. In California, everything goes. You can pay people to go out and collect absentee ballots. That is the, I think it was the first state that passed it, that passed the law that allowed ballot harvesting. Now, this is where it gets interesting in Florida. So I thought ballot harvesting was against the law in Florida. But I started seeing some comments by elected officials and other people in this debate over the election bill. And it turns out that ballot harvesting was illegal in the 1990s, but now it is legal. And let me explain this. It's legal in the sense that volunteers for a campaign can go pick up as many absentee ballots as they want. They can't do it for pay, but they can pick up as many as they want. Now, the point on that is, how do you enforce the payment issue? Well, I am a paid person for this campaign, but my job is to make phone calls. I'm out here volunteering, picking up absentee ballots. So as you can see,
like
Bobby, it's a loophole. It's tough to enforce. Just like in Georgia, ballot harvesting was against the law, but they had all these drop boxes because of the pandemic. And so I understand why they did that, because it was a big election and we were in a pandemic. But they could not enforce the ballot harvesting law because they couldn't figure out, they couldn't see who was putting those ballots in the drop box.
And that's a conversation that I do remember from that time around here, because when we brought this up the first time, one of the big arguments in the news was like, okay, well, maybe we can put people here to enforce this, enforce that. And they're like, no, who are your people? Who are you getting to enforce these things?
Right. And so that became an issue. So now Georgia is trying to deal with that by saying, look, we're going to limit the number of drop boxes. But again, this is in Georgia where ballot harvesting is illegal. In Florida, this election bill that is moving through the legislature does nothing to stop ballot harvesting for people who are volunteers. Okay, now, I'm shocked by that. And Republicans who are in charge and have been in charge, from what I understand, changed the law back in the early 2000s. So in the 1990s, you used to have to have witness when you did an absentee ballot. In other words, I would sign my absentee ballot and somebody had to witness it. So then what would happen is this: you were not allowed to witness more than one or two ballots. And so you could check and see if somebody was witnessing a lot of ballots. That is gone too.
So I also have a question about this, but
no, go ahead, go ahead.
So my question would be like how did they make this change like in the laws without, you know, so discreet, without it being, we're discovering this now, you know, you said the early 2000s.
That's a great question, and I haven't looked into that yet. What I have found out is the status of the situation, and so, and the thing that bothers me is I don't know how many people know this, and everybody's talking about this, this election bill is going through the legislature, and it's going to fix some of these problems that, you know, happened during the pandemic. You know, from my perspective, looking at ballot harvesting is the major issue. I think that, and I've said this before on the show, is that when I go and vote, I have to give my ID. Nobody goes in the ballot with me. I get my ballot. No one's talking to me. That vote, I think, is worth less from someone who gets an absentee ballot, someone picks it up and helps them fill it out, or can legally help them fill it out and go to the next door and do the same thing. I don't think that's right. And what I'm telling you, if you're listening here, is the Republicans are in charge, and ballot harvesting by volunteers is legal in Florida. And I'm going to continue to research that. But to me, that was a shocker. All right, enough on the ballot harvesting. When we get back, we're going to talk about the 7-day COVID trends and also private businesses versus government requirements on these vaccine passports. We'll talk a little bit about that. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks, one of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen. The quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they don't mark up the cost of stone materials. The way they say it, since they didn't carve it out of the mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fees as if they did. Great pricing, amazing craftsmanship, and quick turnaround from an honest local company. Give Spartan Stoneworks a call at 765-2037, 765-2037. We appreciate their sponsorship. Before we get to the COVID numbers, there will be a meeting, a Zoom meeting, and we got to get rid of these Zoom meetings here, I think now. But anyway, there'll be a Zoom meeting with regards to getting input on the Market District part. We have an article up at Taos Reports on this park. It is, speaking of redevelopment and economic growth, Market Square, our Market District, the area with the Market Square Shopping Center is finally getting the redevelopment moving forward, and this park is going to be a large part of that. But there are three opportunities on April the 14th, which is tomorrow, and the 15th. And we've got the Zoom links in the article, and they're trying to figure out what elements to put into the park. And this is going to get a little dicey because there's some movement about a skate park, and that doesn't fit in the area. And there's a survey that shows that. So we'll see how much traction that gets. There is a survey, and you can go to our site and get the top two elements that people want at that park. So check that out. Now, on the COVID numbers, if you go to our website, Taos Reports, we have the weekly report ending April the 11th. And as I had mentioned before, we track cases, hospitalizations, and the positivity rate. You know, since January, everything has really been falling fast. Now that we've fallen under 50 cases per day, that's down from 300. We basically just fluctuate, and we've been below 50 cases since February, the end of February. I think last week saw a bit of an increase from... Let me look at this real quick. From 27 cases to 35 cases. But again, we've been below 50 since the end of February. Hospitalizations have sort of flattened out at 20, seems to fluctuate around that number 20 for the last 3 to 4 weeks. positivity rates. You know, that was the big thing back in the last year. And the benchmark was to get below 5%, and you could start doing some different things. We've been below 5%. This is a seven-day average. So this isn't like, you know, just looking at one day. But we've been – seven-day average has been below 5% for 47 consecutive days. And so this last week, it ticked up from 2.3% to 3.2%. But again, 47 consecutive days. I did read on the news feeds that – or the mayor of Orlando, which is actually the mayor of Orange County, they're a consolidated city – is looking at alleviating the mask mandate, or at least providing some guidance to the mask mandate because of the low numbers in Orange County. So it'll be interesting. Actually, we have a county commission meeting today at 3, and we'll see if that comes up at all. Because it really, you know, the word from local leaders is to continue what you're doing. You're making progress. So we'll see what happens there. I wanted to talk a minute about the private businesses versus government requirement. There's a debate going on now about the cruise industry, and you know, Governor DeSantis is in the middle of this. And you know, I guess the question is now, and this, you know, this gets right at the heart of maybe conservative thought or libertarian thought. And you know, it's one thing to be against or to argue against a government mandate or a government requirement. It's another to tell a private business that they can't basically do what they want to do. And, you know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where the governor comes out on this, because this is really – he's going to really have to thread a needle here, because, you know, part of the argument is that businesses that don't want to offer masks should be able not to do that. Well, right here in Leon County, there is a mandate. So if the mandate was to go away and there were businesses that wanted to offer, that wanted to still say, listen, you need to wear a mask, or maybe they recommend you wear a mask and not require it. I mean, how could the government tell them not to do that? What do you think, Bobby?
I think that's like just a tricky thing in itself, because I agree. Like, yeah, you can't tell people what to do with their own things, you know, and I don't know that. Maybe I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think one of the things is they are telling, in the name of safety, they're saying mask mandate, right?
Yeah.
So,
but they don't. I think they're just saying that because that's what they're supposed to say in their position.
Are you saying that politicians aren't sincere?
I would never, Steve Stewart.
So anyway, I think this is going to be a debate that you know, I don't know if this is something that he's going to if this is a hill he wants to die on. But I mean, trying to require businesses not to require masks, I think is going to be a tough thing. I think eventually, you know, you look at the cruise industry. If I owned a cruise industry, the last thing you want is a breakout.
Yeah, you're masking up on my ship, boy.
Well, you know, I don't know about masking up, but I mean, I think I would take some mitigation efforts. You know, to at least one of the things is you want to make people feel comfortable. Even if it doesn't work, you're actually making them feel comfortable, right?
Yeah.
And so I could understand it from that perspective. You know, well, yeah, it doesn't work. I don't believe it works, but I'm the cruise director or the cruise line. Yeah, I know it doesn't work. We got to do it because it makes people feel comfortable. And that's, you know, we got to make money. We got to get people on the boat. So I just don't know that you can, you're actually getting into the running of the businesses. And so we'll see where that goes. And that's something that, the governor's gonna have to deal with. Another thing he had on his plate was he held another conference with COVID doctors that some people think are out on the mainstream. YouTube took a video down, so he had another conference. And now I think it's interesting because some of the things they were debating about, when is it appropriate for kids to wear a mask? I mean, there's debate about that by even the World Health Organization. And then, you know, there's some questions about some of the safety of the vaccines. What are we hearing today? Johnson & Johnson has been, I think it's been polled, hasn't it?
Right before we walked in here to do the show, they were talking about like side effects and stuff.
And I think they've pulled Johnson & Johnson because of some blood clotting concerns. So look, again, you know, I think in a free debate, you're going to have people that have positions that are on the fringe. But at the same time, you know, you've got to be open to maybe it's not as fringe as we think on some of these things. And again, YouTube taking a video down because of that, Sounds it really says more about what YouTube, which is owned by obviously a bigger conglomerate, I think it's owned by Google. And so anyway, that's an issue that the governor's wrestling with and continues to use it to his advantage, I think, from the PR perspective. All right, that's all we have for today. We'll be back on Thursday, give you an update on the school board and the county commission meeting and anything else that happens. So tune in then. Until then, have a great afternoon. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold.